Well, at this time, I'm proud to bring along one of the great talk show hosts in America. As a matter of fact, now there's none any better than Tom Joyner. Tom is one of the very best, a great pioneer in this genre of radio. And Tom Joyner, all I can say about you, we're mighty proud of everything you do for us. We've got great, great personalities, none any better than Tom Joyner. So, Tom, come on in.
Thank you, Carl. And off the record, just a second, I was listening to the news about the lawsuit as to why you shouldn't have to produce an ID. You shouldn't have to identify yourself in order to vote. That is the most asinine thing we have ever tossed back and forth. You've got to have an ID to do so many things, including collect welfare and food stamps. So voting with an ID, showing who you are, it's just ridiculous to be arguing about it. Now, let me explain why elections change little or nothing in Washington. So many of us have said, we sent these folks to Washington, these Republicans. They said they'd make changes. They haven't made the changes. Well, voters turned out over the majority of the House and Senate and turned it over to Republicans who promised to make those changes. Like you, I'm frustrated by their lack of progress and even the lack of effort. Many decades ago, the American people lost control of the political process. Elected officials found that they could use the people's tax money to buy themselves an office, and they set about to put policies and laws into place to make the odds of their eviction from the gravy train slim and none. Money drives members of Congress. With it, they keep power and influence. Without it, they lose that power and influence. And they are not about to let that happen. We must face the fact that we do not have a two-party system in this country. We do not have it at all. We do have name tags for Democrats and Republicans, but the differences between them has become slimmer and slimmer over the years. Massive amounts of money comes into politicians who play the game with corporate America and Wall Street interests. Lobbyists roam the halls of Congress with suitcases full of money. Money that politicians, Democrat and Republican, can smell a block away. Nobody with common sense believes that a company gives millions of dollars to a politician without expecting a quid pro quo, and politicians deliver the favors in return for that money. Kay Hagan, whose Senate seat went to Republican Tom Tillis, has wasted little time in signing up as a lobbyist to lean on Congress's Senate contracts she made, or contacts she made, in her one term there. She'll take home now big paychecks, and her clients can expect her to buy influence for them on Capitol Hill. But Hagan is not alone. Many who get voted out of office sign up as lobbyists to keep their personal gravy train running. The truth is that none of these ex-office holders, Republican or Democrat, should be allowed to lobby Congress for at least one term 6 years after they are sent home by the voters. In the meantime, term limits should be imposed upon Congress. When we allow a politician to gain office in the House or Senate and remain there until they die or become senile, the stage is set for fraud and corruption. Moreover, the top aides of these office holders use their position to befriend lobbyists with an eye to a cushy job with those lobbyists after their boss leaves office. This incestuous system works against the best interest of the American people. What can we do? We're told we can enforce term limits by voting the rascals out of office. But the truth is they have stacked the deck to make that option very difficult to reach. To compound the problem, Congress has established the seniority system that makes it impossible for newly elected politicians to effect change. The seniority system guarantees that those who have been there the longest, those who are the biggest part of the problem, get to make and enforce the rules, even if they are as crooked as Bernie Madoff. When we, the voters, seek a new group of representatives to change course, they are relegated to a back seat in Congress. Under this archaic seniority system, longer-term office holders can keep their newer colleagues at bay by calling in favors and granting favors among themselves. And it happens not just with Democrats, but Democrats and Republicans, with a wink and a nod from both sides. In the early 80s, I bought an apartment at 21st and N Streets in Washington to be closer to the Federal Communications Commission. I kept it for about 5 years. In that time, I would eat out at lunch or dinner in the city. What I observed were Democrats and Republicans slapping one another on the back and enjoying thick steaks. They can rail against one another on the floor of the House or Senate at any given time, but then they go out and drink and play together, only to meet again the next day and put the charade back into play. They know the secrets of each other, which keeps them at bay. But if one senses the other is weakened, they'll use those secrets and attack like a rabid hyena in darkest Africa. It's a game. The politicians know it's a game, but that's the way the game is played in Washington. How do voters get the changes they expect for their vote? You can't. The political system is stacked against you by both parties. That's why we saw no real differences when voters rose up to throw out the Democrat majority. The new Republican majority was consigned to a back seat, admonished not to make waves if they wanted party backing in their next election. And the farce continues to play out. Now that's why the Republican majority is so outspoken against Ted Cruz. Cruz didn't play by their rules. Instead, he stood up against the system just as the voters had sent him there to do. When Mitch McConnell lied to Cruz and other freshmen, Cruz called him out of it. He said, "I am calling foul." And those with seniority rallied around McConnell. The seniority system assures that those who have been there longer and are part of the problem get to decide who chairs which committees and who will get assignments on those committees. If a senator with less seniority makes waves, they are threatened with the loss of those committee assignments. As long as we allow politicians to protect each other's interest and thumb their noses at the American people, this sewer system and its obnoxious odor will run through the halls of Congress. This seniority system farce would be easy to change. The Senate only has to change Senate rules by a vote of 51 senators. If the Republicans wanted to change this archaic system, they could easily do so, but the long beards of the Republican Party don't want it to change. Unless, of course, the Democrats were to get control. Again, the Democrats had that control, and they could have eliminated the seniority system, but they, too, failed to do so. Both parties are to blame for the fact that little gets done in Congress. Harry Reid was the most notorious Senate leader by simply not allowing more than 300 bills to come to a vote. Reid covered Obama's back and ruled the Senate like a 10-horn dictator. If a proposed bill was not favorable to Democrats and Obama, Reid simply tossed it onto a stack of bills he had already killed by his inaction. Harry Reid will go down in history as one of, if not the number one, dishonest, greedy politicians in government. He is, simply put, a devious scoundrel. With Reid out, the Republicans are stuck with Mitch McConnell as Senate leader due to seniority. And McConnell is a great example of why having more years in office does not necessarily mean more competence. The National Review is a publication for conservatives. I occasionally read it, or did read it, but they stepped over the line last week with the magazine's assault on Donald Trump. Their point is that Trump is not conservative enough for them. Now, I'm a conservative, but there are degrees of conservatism, just as with liberalism. I'm not looking for the most conservative candidate for president. I'm looking for someone who will reverse the damage done to America under Barack Obama's fundamental changes. The slam against Trump by the National Review comes from a group of establishment Republicans who apparently believe that if Trump is not as far right as they are, he's bad news. One of the problems with the Republican Party is a faction that believes anyone not exactly like them must be destroyed. Now, I'm not ready to endorse Trump, but fair is fair, and this National Review attack is not fair. The president heads the executive branch of government, and Trump is a proven executive. Our country needs a leader who understands how to build an economy, and Trump has a proven record of success in business. We need a president who is not financed by and owned by major corporations and Wall Street, and Trump would owe them nothing, having turned down their contributions to his campaign. Now, I don't fear a Donald Trump presidency, and I'll vote for him if he's the nominee. Having said all of that, I confess that I get turned off by Trump's bluster and his outside ego. On the other hand, though, we have sought a transparent government, and Trump would be the most transparent of all in that he says whatever comes into his mind. He does not parse his words or seek to be politically correct. That I admire. Again, I'm not endorsing Donald Trump as yet, but I do reject the old establishment Republicans who don't want anyone who might rock their boat. They have become desperate, and thus the attack on Trump's conservative credentials, just as I reject it, and I reject the far-left torchbearers. I will not, and we should not, walk lockstep with them. Now, going away from politics for a moment, I have a different view of the Oscar awards that Jada Pinkett Smith, Spike Lee, and a few others have. Smith's husband, Will Smith, did a terrific job in the movie Concussion. But no one is guaranteed an Oscar nomination. It is true that for the last 2 years, no black actor has been nominated, and it's also true that 94% of the nominators are white. But in past years, there have been many black actors who deserved and won not only the nomination, but the Oscar itself. And of those 94% of nominators who are white, a good 90% are extremely liberal. To argue now that more blacks should be part of the nominating numbers is fine. But that suggests that those black people would vote for black actors based on skin color. It also suggests that white nominators don't vote for the best performance, but for the color of the actor's skin. I don't believe that, especially coming from liberals. And that's ironic, considering that almost the same 94% of black American voters voted for Barack Obama because of the color of his skin and celebrated in the streets when he won. I agree with the black actress Stacey Dash that we either have to be segregated or integrated in our country. And that means that if we are to be integrated, which I prefer, that BET, Black Entertainment Television, Black Entertainment Awards, Black America Contest, Black History Month, and the like, be discontinued. Black women compete and fare well in the Miss America pageant, but white women are barred from even competing in the Miss Black America pageant. That lessens the validity of the call for a boycott of the Oscars, because a black actor, if he was not nominated, still has an opportunity next year. They only nominate, for instance, for the Actor of the Year, 5 people. Critics need to tell us which one of those white actors should have been replaced by a black actor based on performance, not the color of their skin. Which one should we take out and put in somebody who is black? We have become so divided and politically correct in this country that I fear we may never be able to unite again, even if our country is attacked. This call for a boycott of the Oscars by several black actors means that the next black actor nominated, and believe me, there will be one, at least one, nominated next year, or one who wins will be suspect. Was it the performance or the color of their skin to meet some sort of quota? We can't have it both ways. If Black America is to have events that are exclusively for black people, They have no right to complain about an event where they have no evidence of racism, but choose to boycott anyway. Now, we're nearing the most important election in our country's history. Like you, I've been watching and listening to the candidates for president in order to determine who should get my vote. I'm closer, but not yet ready to say who I will endorse and vote for until we get a bit closer to election time. What I do know is that the Democrat Party has worked themselves into a corner and offers voters two bad choices. Mark O'Malley was never a serious choice. Democrats offer us Hillary Clinton, an elderly woman whose entire adult life has been consumed by scandals, lies, and unethical conduct. And Bernie Sanders, an elderly socialist who honeymooned in Russia, flirts with communism, and who makes no bones of the fact that he is a proponent of higher taxes and free everything for everybody. His proposals would more than double the $19 trillion deficit we now have and would bankrupt us. Sanders had said that he would be open to taking 90% of the incomes in taxes. It's not Monica Lewinsky who is Looney Tunes, it's Bernie Sanders. On the Republican side, there is a diverse number of candidates, including a woman, a black, and Latinos. While most of them never had a chance for the party nomination, every single one of them is a far better choice than what the Democrats are offering us. I've said that I would support Trump, Cruz, or Rubio. They're the only ones that I think have a chance at the nomination, and I don't want to waste my vote. The selection is far too important. As in other years, the campaign ads have been a turnoff. Do we really care if a candidate made a mistake in grammar school? Didn't we all? Do we really want to argue which candidate is more conservative versus which one can better run the country? We should not care. But the sneaky half-truths or no-truths in campaign ads point us that way. And both Democrats and Republicans are guilty. Now, I'm going to make my decision based upon who I believe will be best positioned to undo the harm caused by two terms of Barack Obama. Lord help us if a continuation of Obama's failed policies come to pass with the election of Hillary Clinton. Just last week, she sang the praises of Obama, first to try to get him amenable to pardoning her if she's indicted, and I believe she will be, and then to let us all know that what Obama has done is what she wants to continue. Surely even yellow dog Democrats will open their eyes and put their country above this kind of political party loyalty. We are out of time in America. We have no more room for error. The economy is tanking, terrorism is spreading in the world, and here at home, and the future of our children and grandchildren is at stake. Now, I'm at an age where I can live with my mortality, but I love my family deeply and fear the world that we're leaving for them if we do not correct course and quickly. I do not give a rat's red ears about the Democrat or Republican Party. I'm a true independent voter, beholden to no one. I will vote for the person whom I believe has the best chance of turning our country back around. If that was a Democrat or a Republican, so be it. But Democrats have given us no choice at all. Now, last week, I spoke to you about Islam and jihad. I hope you heard it because it was something that needed to be said, and many are afraid to say it. Europe welcomed the tide of refugees pouring in and now find that they cannot cope with it. In the first 3 weeks of this year, 35,000 refugees crossed the Aegean Sea to Greece from Turkey. The situation in Turkey is so severe that the major cruise lines have announced they will no longer stop in Turkey. Millions of refugees from the Middle East have made their way through Turkey en route to northern Europe. ISIS and other Islamic jihadist groups are finding it easy to embed themselves among the refugees and gain entry into countries they want to destroy, including the United States. instead of taking these people in, a no-fly zone needs to be established in Syria to ensure that those refugees can remain in their home country. The United States has to lead that effort. But if we have seen so many times in the past, Barack Obama will do nothing that might adversely affect Muslims. This crisis will explode in 2016 unless the answer is found and enforced. Something that should concern us all is the report last week that airports in the United States found more than 2,200 guns each week, most loaded in the luggage of passengers. That's more than 550 gun intercepts every week, more than 785 every day. That is intolerable, and we cannot continue to allow people the feeble excuse of, "I forgot." The penalty is anemic, and that puts us all at risk. Now, to the elephant in our room, the issue of personal responsibility. A report last Thursday on a Raleigh TV station featured a rather large woman whose central heating system had gone out. She was awaiting the arrival of parts to fix it. The woman and the lady TV reporter were in panic mode. "It's cold, and I understand the need for heat, but many of us grew up without central heating, just a pot-bellied stove in what we called the living room, fueled by coal, thick with smoke." Now, what bothered me the most about this TV report was the fact that this was home to 8 children, and 2 unemployed adults. The children ranged in age from 15 to a baby just 3 months old. At what point should 2 unemployed adults stop bringing children into this world they cannot afford to raise? These children are doomed to another generation of poverty and life through government handouts, more likely to become uneducated adults and unemployed themselves. This is an American tragedy that's played out in every state in the Union. The answer from government has been to take money from the paychecks of those who are employed and give it to those who practice irresponsibility on a grand scale. Any person with a conscience wants to do whatever they can to help someone in need. But when it's apparent that the person in need has no intention of practicing personal responsibility, the urge to support that behavior fades away. Each new baby brings an increase in the amount of the check from government. Since government has no money except for that taken from working people, it's those people who suffer silently while the cries for more and more assistance ring out. Now, before liberals rush from their lattes to call me a racist, let me point out that there are more white people on the welfare rolls and government social program rolls than black people, simply because there are far more white people in the country. While it is true that the percentage of the black population on those handout programs is far greater, it is not just blacks gaming the system. Approximately half of our population pays no federal income tax at all. That means the other 50% bear all of the burden, and that's unsustainable. Every American has the opportunity to gain 12 years of free education in public schools. For those who take advantage of that education opportunity, doors open to a future. For those who drop out of school or refuse to do the work necessary to become educated, the door remains closed. Why then do we continue to finance a safety net for those who refuse to even attempt to fly? Liberals have an odd idea of how to control this. Just kill the baby. By the millions. And it's been going on for quite a while. We do these folks no favor by letting them think that government is going to take care of them all of their life, and that they need only crank out children and cash the checks. This is something we need to be serious about, and to this point, we have not been serious. On Monday, January 18, I was at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville to deal with lower back pain that's gotten worse over the years, and I'm just now in a position to comment on Barack Obama's State of the Union address. It's no secret to anyone, except pie-in-the-sky liberals, that Obama lies more than a badly hit golf ball. But he exceeded his reputation in this address. Now, I'll just comment on a few of those lies. Politicians are experts at parsing words to mislead. Remember when Bill Clinton told us under oath that he was not quite sure what the meaning of the word is? Neither Clinton has any shame, Barack Obama no exception. He said in the State of Union address that he had cut our deficits by almost three quarters. But Obama doubled our debt, running up more debt in 7 years than all the previous presidents combined. The cuts he made came only after Republicans took over the House in 2010. Anyone claiming that America's economy is in decline is peddling fiction, Obama said, without shame. The truth is that the slowest recovery since World War II, labor force participation is the lowest in decades. Wages are stagnant. And now, just a couple of weeks since Obama's fanciful lies, we see the stock market in free fall. Americans watching their 401k savings evaporate. A world economy on the brink. And America's economy reeling. Obama also touted Obamacare. But Obamacare canceled insurance coverage for millions of Americans who did not change jobs. It also raised deductibles and premiums so high that many insurance companies are leaving the Obama exchanges totally. Now, I've got a lot more to say, and I may even say it later this afternoon, but I hope you get the point. We are at a point in our country where we've got to make sure we make the changes that are necessary, not just changes because some glib fool with a silver tongue had the audacity to make them. Carl?
Yes, sir, Tom. Tom, I thank you for a wonderful commentary this afternoon, and you're just absolutely the best, and we're just proud to have you, and we just can't say enough good things about you. You're one of the great pioneers in broadcasting, and we have the greatest talk show host in America, led by Tom Jones and John B. Wells and Kuna, Jeff Kuna, and people like that. Tom, I can't thank you enough, and I certainly hope you can come back. We're going to try to find ways of getting you on air more often because everything you say makes a lot of sense.
Well, I appreciate it, Carl. I do a lot of work on these. I don't just shoot from the hip. I put it to paper, and then I report it. And I will, I have said this so many times, I will never intentionally lie or mislead anybody listening to any commentary I ever do. I don't do it for profit. I do it for my country. God bless America.